You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. Today we're looking for your reaction on the failure of the Senate to adopt an auto industry bailout. What do you think? What should be done to either help the automotive industry or not at this point? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org.
You know, we're still getting suggestions for the car czar's name. David writes on our website, kind of a little too clever, David. Peter Sarsgaard, car czar. Do we still need a czar? Let us know at 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org. Well, a lot of sentences these days begin with, for the first time since records were taken, or for the first time in three decades or five decades. Since 1951, for the first time since records of American indebtedness have been kept, the debt of the American household has fallen. Is this encouraging news, or is it a sign of some deep structural changes in the U.S. economy? To talk about it and all sorts of things going on in the economy this morning is our friend Krista Freeland, U.S. Managing Editor of the Financial Times. She joins us from New York. Krista, thanks for being part of the program.
My pleasure, John. Good morning.
Good morning. So the debt going down is an indication that one of the major sort of streams of cash into American households is starting to slow down. If debt was financing consumer retail purchases, the slowing down of debt would seem to be a fairly direct, effector of consumer demand. Is that how it's playing out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the decline in household debt is one of those perverse things where it's something that most economists think should be happening in the medium term, but most economists will be really worried that it's happening right now in the short term. And that's because, you know, right now the huge problem with the economy is the sources of demand just seem to be drying up. Companies aren't spending and households aren't spending. And so, you know, when that happens, you just have further and further contraction. That's why people are talking about the need for such a huge government stimulus. But in the medium term, it's been clear for some time that American households need to, as it were, rebuild their balance sheets. American households have been living beyond their means for a while, and that couldn't continue indefinitely.
And if we're all banks, so we should be deleveraging our household accounts, I guess, to use the new parlance. Is there any sign that...
Right, and I think that is what people are doing. You know, people were leveraged partly by having taken out home equity loans on their homes, so you sort of levered your house up to help assist you with various things you wanted to spend on. People were levered up by maybe taking on credit card debt. I think that's absolutely right. That is what is happening at the household level.
But, Chrissy, are they not spending because they are now maxed out, they don't have the money, or they're not getting the credit?
I think it's a combination. I think that it is definitely partly the case that it's much, much harder to get credit now than it was during that boom period. I think it's also partly a question of psychology. You know, one thing that we are seeing is a real shift, and even people who don't need credit, who maybe haven't lost their jobs, are displaying a real reluctance to spend just because there's a real concern that the economy could get worse next year, and I think that's probably a justified concern.
Well, let's take a look at this idea of shift, because some of what's going on in the economy is related to a traditional business cycle analysis, but there are other things we haven't really seen before. For instance, the paring back of the workforce from the top down rather than from the bottom up, which happened in the last really big recession back in the 1970s. These things seem more like tectonic plate shifts, you know, structural changes in the economy. What do you see changing that's not going to bounce back necessarily?
Yeah, well, I do think you're right that there's a tectonic plate shift. And actually, you might be surprised at where I see part of that shift being focused, but that is actually China. I think a big reason why the American household was, as it were, able to lever up so much, why Americans were able to consume more than they were producing, was because we had this rise of the emerging market countries led by China, which were producing more than they were consuming and had a super, super high savings rate. And what we're seeing now is this huge global shift, with America suddenly not able to to spend as much and not willing to spend as much as it was before. And, you know, an interesting aspect of that is it is having a huge and really devastating impact on emerging market economies, particularly China, which are going to have to figure out ways to stimulate domestic consumption.
Well, stimulation is sort of on the minds of people in Detroit as they worry if they're even going to have a job if this auto bailout doesn't get passed in some measure to get General Motors through the next couple of weeks. Is it possible that what Congress is saying and what the market is ultimately saying is there are too many car makers in the world and somebody's got to go and it looks like Detroit's going to be first in line?
I think that's absolutely what the markets are saying. There are too many car makers. There are too many models of cars being produced. And there are just too many cars. And I do think, you know, there is an analogy to the housing sector that we saw among the big three. And that is that, you know, Detroit, in a way, fed the American addiction to consumption with cheap credit to encourage people to buy new cars very, very quickly. And that is part of the problem for Detroit right now, because it turns out that in a recession, people are deciding, well, actually, I don't need to buy a new car every 2 years. And they actually don't, because their cars are still running.
Right, and now
so,
they
yeah,
can't. Now
that's
they
part
can't.
Of what's happening.
Right, and now they can't because the credit has dried up. Krista Friedland, U.S. Managing Editor of the Financial Times, thanks so much for joining us.
A pleasure, John.
So it's interesting. The car makers, she argues, fuel our addiction to retail spending as much as fueling our, you know, Neiman Marcus purchases as anything else, getting used to the idea that you can get a new thing every couple of years.
Oh, and they were very good at advertising that. And, of course, now the advertising industry is really going to suffer from the fact that the auto industry is not spending all of those tens of millions of dollars. But Christia's point was the same point we heard yesterday about how they were just building too many brands of cars, that perhaps they would have done better to concentrate on just a couple.
And people around the world don't get cars as frequently as Americans do, so the business model is more vulnerable here. Femi Okeh has our headlines here in our uncertain world.
Hello there. Good morning to you all. The time is 28 minutes past the hour.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.